So this is a lengthy purport, which gives a little bit of a description of the contents of these some of these literatures. So you'll have to overcome any kind of inattentiveness. Good luck. In the first wave of the book known as Bhakti Ratnakar, it is said that Sanatana Goswami understood Srimad Bhagavatam by thorough study and explained it in his commentary known as Vaishnava Toshini. All the knowledge that Sri Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami directly acquired from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was broadcast all over the world by their expert service. Oh, there's an interesting point. Broadcast all over the world. Of course, it was by their endeavors that others were inspired to literally broadcast it all over the world. So, nana shastra vichari naika nipano sad dharma sangstapako. You know this prayer by Srinivasacharya. Lokanam hitakarino tribhuvane. All over the three worlds. Manyo sharanya karo. Radha Krishna padara vinda bhajanan nandena mataliko. Vande rupa sanatano raguya goshi jiva gopalako. So these Goswamis laid the whole foundation for the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy on the order of Lord Chaitanya. So it, through their efforts, this knowledge was gradually spread all over the world. And according to the song, all over the three worlds. So the power of bhakti is very amazing. So Sanatana Goswami gave his Vaishnav Toshini commentary to Srila Jiva Goswami. Now, who was Jiva Goswami? He was the son of Anupam, one of their brothers, the brother of Sanatana and Rupa Goswami. And Jiva Goswami was considered to be the greatest scholar who ever lived, by some, by many, actually. Even the Mayavadis recognize him as a great scholar. Anyway, this Vaishnava Toshini commentary that was written by Sanatana was given to Jiva Goswami for editing. And Srila Jiva Goswami edited this under the name of Laghu Toshini. Whatever he immediately put down in writing was finished in the year 1476 Shaka. Srila Jiva Goswami completed Laghu Toshini in the year Shakabda 1504. So that appears to be 18 years later. The subject matter of Hari Bhakti Vilas by Sanatana Goswami was collected by Srila Gopal Bhatta Goswami and is known as a Vaishnav Smriti. This Vaishnav Smriti Grantha was finished in 20 chapters known as Vilasas. In the first Vilas, so now we're going to get a lengthy description of what's in each Vilas. In the first Vilas, there is a description of how a relationship is established between the spiritual master and the disciple. But just a note on that, Sanatana Goswami is known as the Sambandha Acharya. So that's about establishing the relationship with Krishna or with the spiritual master. So in the first Vilas, this is described. And mantras are explained also. In the second Vilas, the process of initiation is described. In the third Vilas, the methods of Vaishnava behavior are given with emphasis on cleanliness, constant remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the chanting of the mantras given by the initiating spiritual master. In the fourth Vilas are descriptions of sangskara, the reformatory method, tilak, the application of 12 tilaks on 12 places of the body, mudra, marks on the body, mala, chanting with beads, and guru puja, worship of the spiritual master. In the fifth Vilas, one is instructed on how to make a place to sit for meditation, and there are descriptions of breathing exercises. So sometimes we think, oh, this is just for the the gross materialists who are trying to do some kind of gymnastic exercise for their health, but actually, in order to sit and chant for many hours, this is truly meditation, and you have to learn how to prepare the body to be able to do it. So it says there are descriptions of breathing exercises, meditation, and worship of the Shalagram Shila representation of Lord Vishnu. In the sixth vilas, the required practices for inviting the transcendental form of the Lord and bathing him are given. In the seventh vilas, one is instructed on how to collect flowers used for the worship of Lord Vishnu. So this is considered a skill. Now, you would think anybody can gather flowers. Why do there need to be instructions on it? Well, there are instructions. How it is to be done in such a way that the Lord will be very much pleased. In the eighth vilas, there is a description of the deity and instructions on how to set up incense, light lamps, make offerings, dance, play music, beat drums, garland the deity, offer prayers and obeisances, and counteract offenses. In the ninth vilas, there are descriptions about collecting tulsi leaves, offering oblations to forefathers according to Vaishnav rituals, and offering food. In the tenth vilas, there are descriptions of the devotees of the Lord, Vaishnavas, or saintly persons. In the 11th vilas, there are elaborate descriptions of deity worship and the glories of the holy name of the Lord. One is instructed on how to chant the holy name of the deity, and there are discussions about offenses committed while chanting the holy name, along with methods for getting relief from such offenses. There are also descriptions of the glories of devotional service and the surrendering process. So now there's 20 vilases, now we're up to 12. In the 12th vilas, Ekadasi is described. In the 13th vilas, fasting is discussed, as well as observance of the Mahadwadashi ceremony. In the 14th vilas, different duties for different months are outlined. In the 15th vilas, there are instructions on how to observe Ekadasi fasting without even drinking water. Anybody do that? Yeah? Very good. I've tried it a few times. I don't know if I'd try it anymore. It's a good thing to do, but not easy for everyone. There are also descriptions of branding the body with the symbols of Vishnu. Anybody know anybody that's branded the symbols of Vishnu on their bodies? I have a friend who did that. He can't get rid of him now. He doesn't want to, but... And discussions of Chaturmasya observations during the rainy season, and discussions of Janmashtami, Parshva Ekadashi, Shravana Dvadashi, Ramnomi, and Vijayadashami. So that's up through 15. The 16th vilas discusses duties to be observed in the month of Kartik, October, November, or the Damodar month, or Urja, when lamps are offered in the deity room or above the temple. There are also descriptions of the Govardhan Puja and Rathayatra. The 17th vilas discusses preparations for deity worship, Mahamantra chanting, and the process of japa. In the 18th vilas, the different forms of Sri Vishnu are described. The 19th vilas discusses the establishment of the deity and the rituals observed in bathing the deity before installation. The 20th vilas discusses the construction of temples, referring to those constructed by the great devotees. The details of the Hari Bhakti Vilas Grantha are given by Sri Kaviraj Goswami in the Madhya Lila, chapter 24, verses 329 through 345. So he goes into a bit more detail there about all the practices of the Vaishnavas. The descriptions given in those verses by Kaviraj Goswami are actually a description of those portions compiled by Gopal Bhatta Goswami. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the regulative principles of devotional service compiled by Gopal Bhatta Goswami do not strictly follow our Vaishnava principles. So this is a kind of interesting. This section describes how that actually this condensation. Anyway, I'll just read it and then I'll explain. It says, actually, Gopal Bhatta Goswami collected only a summary of the elaborate descriptions of Vaishnava regulative principles from Hari Bhakti Vilas. It is Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami's opinion, however, that to follow the Hari Bhakti Vilas strictly is to actually follow the Vaishnava rituals in perfect order. He claims that the Smarta Samaj, so this means those Smartas, those rules and regulation type Brahmins, he says, which is strictly followed by caste Brahmins, has influenced portions that Gopal Bhatta Goswami collected from the original Hari Bhakti Vilas. So in other words, the original instructions of Hari Bhakti Vilas were tampered with to some degree. Gopal Bhatta summarized them, but later the Smartas influenced those instructions. So it said, is it therefore very difficult to find out Vaishnava directions from the book of Gopal Bhatta Goswami? It is better to consult the commentary made by Sanatana Goswami himself for Hari Bhakti Vilas under the name of Dig Darshani Tika. Some say that the same commentary was compiled by Gopinath Puja Adhikari, who was engaged in the service of Sri Radha Ramanji and who happened to be one of the disciples of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. So I just want to make a comment. Now, it seems a little laborious to go through all of this, but actually, why was this book compiled in the first place? It was compiled as a science, the science of how to practice bhakti yoga. So in a science, there are many, many details for the exploration or experimentation. You could say if you're going to conduct an experiment, there are strict rules for conducting it if you want to get the result. So this is a very elaborate and conclusive study of the principles of bhakti. Now, what Prabhupada presented to us, of course, one time he said that if I told you everything, you would faint in terms of what things were expected by these devotees. So the idea is he's given us the essence of how to practice Krishna consciousness. The main thing of these nine limbs of bhakti, especially with the special emphasis on Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing and chanting. But there are many different methods for invoking or reviving one's Krishna consciousness. So, therefore, we have this now, this thing that Bhaktisiddhanta was a stickler for following things properly. So, he felt that it's better just to go to the original book, Hari Bhakti Vilas, rather than condensations, which may have been influenced, and just follow that. If you're going to follow it, follow the original book by Sanatana Goswami. Okay, there's a little bit more to this purport. Regarding Brihat Bhagavatamrita, now some of you may have read this by now. I don't know. It's been published by the BBT. Wonderful book. There are two parts dealing with the discharge of devotional service. The first part is an analytical study of devotional service, in which there is also a description of different planets, including the earth, the heavenly planets, Brahmaloka, and Vaikunthaloka. There are also descriptions of the devotees, including intimate devotees, most intimate devotees, and complete devotees. So it seems that apparently there's three descriptions here. That's kind of interesting, isn't it? It's intimate, most intimate, and complete. So the second part describes the glories of the spiritual world known as Goloka Mahatmyam Nirupana, as well as the process of renunciation of the material world. It also describes real knowledge, devotional service, the spiritual world, love of Godhead, attainment of life's destination, and the bliss of the world. In this way, there are 7 chapters in each part, 14 chapters in all. Dashama Tippani is a commentary on the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Another name for this commentary is Brihad Vaishnav Toshani Tika. In the Bhakti Ratnakara, it is said that Dashama Tippani was finished in 1476 Shakabda. So that's our purport. I was thinking about what in the world am I going to say about all this. I haven't really got a lot to say about what's, I mean, the purport speaks for itself. It can be a little overwhelming, you know, trying to figure out, oh my gosh, am I supposed to read the Hari Bhakti Vilas and then try to figure out how to do all these things? Well, no, we've been given the essence by Srila Prabhupada. Gradually, of course, as ISKCON has evolved, they've introduced more and more things from Hari Bhakti Vilas. But the essence, chanting the holy name, this is the thing that we're focused on in this movement. Not just chanting, but spreading it also. Now, I want to say a little bit initially about Sanatana Goswami. And then I want to try to relate it to our own experience, which sometimes when we read these things, we think, what's that got to do with me? You know, this is so remote and so, you know, it's not the culture that I know much about. How do I identify with this, some of these things? So I'll try to get into that in a bit. But right now I'm just going to give a few biographical details. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Adi Leela, Prabhupada gives a little bit of a description of the genealogical background of Sanatana. Says it can be traced back to the 12th century, Shakabda, when a gentleman of the name Sarvagya. It's interesting, you know, Prabhupada uses this term. You know, of course, I don't know what the equivalent would be in India if you say someone's a gentleman. What would you say?
Shriman.
Just Shriman indicates they're a gentleman. So if you don't say Shriman, you're saying they're not one, or? Okay, Shriman. All right, well, we'll go with that. But anyway, he says this, with a gentleman of the name Sarvagya appeared in a very rich and opulent Brahmin family in the province of Karnataka. He had two sons named Aniruddhera Rupeshwara and Harihara, who were both bereft of their kingdoms and thus obliged to reside in the highlands. It almost sounds like... It almost sounds like it's Scotland or something, but it's clearly not. Anyway, they resided in the highlands because it says they were somehow dispossessed of their kingdoms. The son of Rupeshwara, who was named Padmanabha, moved to a place in Bengal known as Naihati on the bank of the Ganges. There he had five sons, of whom the youngest, Mukunda, had a well-behaved son named Kumaradev, who was the father of Rupa, Sanatan, and Vallabha. So they were living in this place. It says in an area bordering a place called Pakla Chandra Dweep in East Bengal, which is, of course, now it's Bangladesh. And the present-day village of Prembagh, which lies near Ramshara in the Jaisur district of Bangladesh, is said by many to be the site of this Kumaradev's house. So he had many sons. This great personality had many sons, but three of them it took the path of Vaishnavism. Later, it says, Sri Vallabha and his elder brothers, Sri Rupa and Sanatan, came from Chandradweep to the village of in the Malda district of Bengal, known as Ramakeli. So Ramakeli takes on quite a prominent position in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Many great personalities came from this village. Jiva Goswami took birth there in that village. And Lord Chaitanya visited that village, and he met Vallabha there. So, initially, this is according to Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami and Vallabha went to Vrindavan under the instructions of Lord Chaitanya, where they met Subhuti Roy, who took them to all around to the different 12 different forests of Vrindavan. And anyway, they were trying to connect with Sanatana Goswami, but they couldn't actually. They kept going round and around into different places, and they ended up It ended up that Rupa and Ananupam met Lord Chaitanya at Benares. And they heard about some of Sanatana Goswami's travels from Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya actually, okay, I know where your brother is and where he's been. So he explained that. And on the order of Mahaprabhu, they went to see the Lord at Jagannath Puri. In 1514 A.D., Anupam passed away. And it says he went to the abode in the spiritual sky where Sri Ramachandra is situated. I'm not sure what the name of that abode is, but do you know? No. It just says he went to that place in the spiritual sky where Sri Ramachandra is situated. So apparently there's some place in the spiritual world where Ramachandra is eternally having his pastimes. So, of course, we know that Vallabha was a great devotee of Ramachandra. His brothers tried to convince him to take up the worship of Radha and Krishna, but he couldn't do it. He tried, and he spent a whole night contemplating but he couldn't, his heart was sold out to Ramachandra, and he just couldn't do it, so he apologized. But they glorified him for it, actually. And he understood that Lord Chaitanya was God, but he couldn't give up his worship of Ram. So now, a little bit more about Sanatana Goswami. Now, Lord Chaitanya's specific instruction to these two brothers, especially Rupa and Sanatana, because Anupam, of course, was a great Vaishnava, but he passed away early. And his instruction to them was to publish many books in support of the Vaishnava religion. In other words, it was not to be some kind of sentimental approach to Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta, Saraswati Thakur has written, and so has Bhaktivinoda Thakur, written many different passages about not imitating the Sahajya tendency, which is to whimsically worship Gaura-Nitai and Radha Krishna and perform many illicit practices. So he wanted them to establish Vaishnavism in a very authoritative way. You could almost say almost in an encyclopedic way. So, and the Lord ultimately advised them both, although they spent some time in Jagannath Puri with Lord Chaitanya. In fact, who was their roommate? Does anybody know who was the roommate of both brothers? At different times, who was their roommate? It was Haridas Thakur. They always considered themselves, even though they came from a very respectable Brahmin family, they considered themselves to be very low because they had associated with Muslims. And they even had a Muslim title, Malik. So they considered themselves not very qualified to associate, to enter the temple at Jagannath Puri. So Sanatana Goswami there's a description of his spiritual identity. He had a spiritual master initially before he met Lord Chaitanya called Vidya Vachaspati, who is a great soul and he's incredibly dedicated. Now Sanatana was the eldest of the brothers. So he was always kind of, in a sense, the leader. He was always given special respect by his brothers. According to the Prabhupada writes this, he says, according to the Vedic system, if someone sees a Muslim, he must perform rituals to atone for the meeting. I guess we can't do that anymore. It wouldn't be politically correct. So it says, Sanatana Goswami always associated with Muslim kings, not giving much attention to the Vedic injunctions. He used to visit the houses of Muslim kings, and thus he considered himself to have been converted into a Muslim. He was therefore always very humble and meek. When Sanatana Goswami presented himself before Lord Chaitanya, he said, I am always in association with lower class people, and my behavior is therefore very abominable. So he always considered himself not really fit to associate with what he considered to be elevated persons. He said he always remained among people of the lower castes. So, nevertheless, the fact is, Sanatana Goswami came from a wonderful Brahmin background, and he was a great scholar, and he was also a man of tremendous wealth and learning, and he was also had great administrative powers. He was administrating the kingdom of the Nawab. Wasn't it Nawab Hussein Shah? That was the person he served under. He and Rupa Goswami were his ministers, and they ran the whole kingdom. In other words, they were very highly qualified persons, but they considered themselves to be insignificant. So this is actually a nice thing. I remember once somebody telling me, a Bengali gentleman told me once, he said, if you want to know who's a high-grade person here in India, he says, you find the person who's got a very great position in the estimation of the world, but whose behavior is extremely humble. So we find just the opposite often in the Western world. The more exalted the position, the more arrogant the behavior. So this is just the opposite. They were very powerful, very elevated persons, and yet their behavior was always very humble. And they weren't just faking it. It wasn't just, you know, sometimes devotees have this tendency to kind of almost fake it, you know, like, oh, I'm the most fallen. You know, you've probably heard this story before. Once a devotee was talking to Prabhupada, and he said, oh, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. And Prabhupada said to him, you're not the most anything. So to think you're the most something is a kind of exhibition of ego in itself. So their humility was real. It wasn't artificial. So once the brothers had met Lord Chaitanya, their whole goal became how to get out of this government service. And go with Lord Chaitanya, be wherever Lord Chaitanya is. And this is something I wanted to touch on more as I go on, but they loved Lord Chaitanya. After they met Lord Chaitanya, they couldn't think of anything else. And so I'm going to tell a little bit about Sanatana's story, because it's a great story, actually. They were in a position where they were sort of really obligated to this ruler, this Nawab, and he was depending on them to manage his kingdom so he could just mess around and have fun hunting and doing whatever he, you know, carrying on with his courtesans and so forth. They expected them to manage everything. And all they could think about is, how can we get out of here? How can we get away from this and go to Lord Chaitanya? So anyway, Rupa Goswami, he left in a fairly stealthy way. He made his getaway before anyone really noticed what was going on. But he wrote a note for Sanatana Goswami and informed him about this money that he'd given to a local grocer. So when he gave up his position, he donated 50% of his wealth to the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas, and the other 50%, 25% for emergencies and 25% for any expenditure that was required. So he had left it with a grocer, and he let Sanatana Goswami know about this. So, because when Sanatana Goswami, what his tactic for leaving the service of the Nawab is different. He met with this group of Brahmins, claimed to be sick. He went on sick leave. I don't know if anybody's used this tactic in their jobs, but, you know, you want to do something that's a little bit more fun than going to work, so you claim to be sick. So he was claiming to be sick, but he was chanting and studying the Srimad Bhagavatam with this group of learned Brahmins. So the Nawab was clever. He figured it out, and he went to see Sanatana Goswami. He says, I see that you're not sick at all. You're avoiding my service. So it says that he was trying to convince Sanatana to go on this traveling with him. I can't remember the name of the place. I think it's mentioned. Somewhere. Where was it? Anyway, he wanted him to go with him But he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't go with the Nawab. So then the Nawab had him imprisoned. He put him in jail. So now this was a real fix. Here he was trying to escape, and had been jailed. He had this note from Rupa Goswami about this money with the grocer. So how was he going to pull this off? Well, he knew how the jailer, the person that was in charge of the prison, was a Muslim, but Sanatana Goswami was a very charming person. And he spoke in such a charming way to the jailer that the jailer actually began to weep with compassion. And so somehow or other, he upped the ante by offering him quite a bit of money as well. You know that I'm a great follower of Allah, and I just want to serve him, and here's some money also. So he convinced this jailer to let him out of prison. And the plan was that he would look like he had drowned himself in the Ganges. He would take the chains off of him, leave them by the bank of the river, and then it looked like he jumped into the river and drowned. So that was the scheme. And, of course, the jailer was nervous about it in case he got caught, but still he managed to pull it off. So he left for Benares to try to meet with Lord Chaitanya. And he had one servant with him called Ishan. So this Ishan had stored away some gold coins. They were on their way, and they stopped at this place. It's like a hotel. It's called, Prabhupada explains, it's called a sarai. A sarai. I don't know if anybody's familiar with this expression, but apparently it's a kind of hotel. So the hotel keeper figured out that this Ishan had gold with him. So he was going to assassinate them, but Sanatana Goswami noticed that this hotel keeper was being very, what's the word? He was being very friendly with them, almost too friendly. So solicitous, very solicitous and friendly. So Sanatana Goswami figured out, okay, Ishan must have some gold on him, because he hadn't revealed to Sanatana that he had this gold. So he knew that they were going to, he figured they'll kill us for this gold. This hotel keeper was actually the king of the thieves of that district. So he went right to the hotel keeper and said, look, I'll give you all the money we've got, but it's just if you'll help us get out of this jungle. So the chief was sort of semi-ashamed that he was going to kill them, and he was so impressed by Sanatana's honesty that he helped them get through the jungle. So they had to cross over some mountains called the Hazipur Mountains, which are presently known as Hazaribagh. So I don't know, this is just detailed information, but so he actually, I mean, just imagine, first of all, he's made this escape, then his life has been threatened by, you know, thieves and dacoits, and now he's having to cross mountains, which he did, and then he met his brother-in-law, Srikanta, who requested that he stay with him. Sanatana Goswami refused to do so because he figured, you know, this would endanger his brother-in-law if he did stay with him. So then, when they parted, Srikanta gave him this very beautiful quality, valuable blanket. Blanket made of very fine material, apparently. So somehow or other, Sanatana Goswami makes it to Varanasi, and he met Lord Chaitanya in the house of Chandrasekhar. Now, he noticed that Sanatana was dressed like a Muslim mendicant, had beard, and had this elaborate blanket wrapped around him, and so he mentioned, why has he got this very valuable-looking blanket? What kind of renunciate is he? He was critical of him wearing this blanket. So immediately he gave it up, and on Lord Chaitanya's order, he shaved his head and he changed to the dress of a mendicant or a babaji. He put on the old garments of Tapana Mishra, and he took prasadam at a house of a local Brahmin. And then he had his discussions, his elaborate discussions with Lord Chaitanya, where Lord explained everything about devotional service. Now, everything means everything. Lord Chaitanya could do that. If I say, I'll explain everything about something to you, of course I'll fall short, because I don't know everything in the first place. But of course, Lord Chaitanya knew everything, and he explained everything. When we say everything, means everything he needed to know. And he told him, after explaining everything, that to write these books on devotional service, especially a book about directions for Vaishnava activities. Now, this is why Sanatana's called the Sambandha Acharya, because this is what Sambandha means, that there's the elaborate directions how to practice Krishna consciousness. So he's Sambandha, Rupa Goswami, Abhidheya. So the execution of such activities. That was one instruction, to write that kind of a book. And the second one, to excavate the holy lost places of pilgrimage. So Lord Chaitanya gave complete blessings for him to do all this work. And he explained to him the Atmarama verse. Well, you know, there's a famous discussion where Lord Chaitanya explains the Atmarama verse. And somebody had explained it. Was it Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had explained it in 11 ways or something like that. 11 ways, I think. But when Lord Chaitanya explained it, he explained it in 61 different ways. Which, of course, completely, as we say, blew the mind of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So, anyway, he explained this to Sanatana Goswami. So he went to Vrindavan. This was the plan, to go to Vrindavan. He met Subhuti Roy. Then he returned to Jagannath Puri through the Jharikhanda forest, through the Madhya Pradesh jungle. Now, this was a very difficult journey. He couldn't get enough proper food, and even the water he drank was contaminated. So he developed sores all over his body. He was oozing pussy-type sores. So he was quite discouraged, because by the time he reached Jagannath Puri, he looked pretty bad. First of all, he would practically been starving, and then he had these sores all over his body. So he was thinking, you know, what's the point of... And then Lord Chaitanya, as soon as Lord Chaitanya saw him, he embraced him. And he just felt so bad that Lord Chaitanya had to touch somebody as messed up looking and as contaminated as he was. And so he was contemplating throwing himself under the wheel of the Jagannath cart and ending his life, because he didn't want to be a burden or a disgrace to Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya saved him. Anybody remember how he saved? Basically, he told him, that he chastised him quite strongly. He said, you're thinking of ending your life. He said, but that body, you told me you were going to give me that body. I have a lot of things that I want to accomplish through that body. So how can you think about destroying another person's property? This is very offensive. If you have someone else's property and you destroy it, that's very bad. That's very inappropriate. Sinful even. So he was convinced. Later he was convinced, who was it? Jagannanda Pandit tried to convince Sanatana to go to Vrindavan before Lord Chaitanya was through instructing Sanatana Goswami. So he said, oh, what does this boy know, Jagannanda Pandit? He's just a boy. What does he know? So Sanatana Goswami objected. He said, see, you're treating him very intimately. You're chastising him as an intimate associate of yours. But me, you treat formally with respect. Oh, because Lord Chaitanya said, Sanatana Goswami is like my guru. So he said, you know, you're treating me formally with all this respect, but I feel that, you know, that you don't see me as one of your intimate associates. So I feel a little let down by that. And Lord Chaitanya had to convince him that wasn't the case. So it was a very loving exchange. There are many different pastimes in Jagannath Puri. At one point, he went to see Lord Chaitanya, but he didn't want to go in the path where the other pilgrims might bump into him. So he went on the beach side and he blistered his feet. So he lived in Jagannath Puri with Lord Chaitanya for a year. And then went to Vrindavan, and at that time he again met Rupa Goswami, and both brothers remained in Vrindavan to execute the orders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So what I wanted to express, or try to express, how does this relate to us? I mean, okay, we understand Sanatana Goswami, a brilliant man, a very qualified person, a very learned person, a spiritually evolved, very evolved person. They from the very earliest years, they had been Vaishnavas. They had even duplicated the holy places of Vrindavan in their local town. They made a Govardhan Hill and they made a Radhakund. They had all these places that they'd almost an imitation of Vrindavan. So what is that? How does, I think the way that I relate to it is this, that just like in the early years of our movement, or let's start with Sanatana Goswami. In Sanatana Goswami's case, it was out of such intense attraction and love for Lord Chaitanya that he embarked on this very dangerous, actually, journey. First of all, giving up his post, which could have been his death. He could have been killed for it. He managed to escape. He went through tremendous austerities and many kinds of difficulty, both physical, mental, psychological, you could say. He went through so much difficulty. And why did he go through all this? He could have been in a very nice, comfortable corporate position. And some devotees offer this. You know, they think, okay, let me be in a nice, comfortable material position and I'll execute Krishna consciousness, being very, very comfortable and well ensconced in my, comfy position. He never took that option. He lived the life of an extreme mendicant. He gave up everything. And why? Why did he do it? Because he had so much attachment, so much love for Lord Chaitanya. So how does that relate to us? Okay, maybe we don't understand really that much about loving God. He was, but you know, when you meet a personality, of course we have met a personality named Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. There was so much attraction for Prabhupada, just as there was so much attraction for Sanatana. You know, when he met Lord Chaitanya was, how can we even imagine what the presence of Lord Chaitanya must have been like? We can only get a hint of it from what we remember of Prabhupada, that it was so, he inspired so much love in his followers. I mean, just see what these followers of Prabhupada did out of affection for him. Just to give some examples, like you have, say, Hridayananda Maharaj is an interesting example, because Prabhupada said, I want you to go and, you know, preach in South America. And Satsarupa Maharaj tells this story that when he went to the airport, he had no idea how he was going to do it. But when he went to the airport, he was going to take a flight, I think it was to Brazil, but the flight had been canceled. So he said, okay, well, how about some other country then? So he just flew off to, I don't know, even remember which country, some country in South America, started preaching, learned how to speak Portuguese and Spanish, and convinced, you know, thousands of people to become devotees. Now, why would anyone, I mean, there were risks involved. There was tremendous adventure and tremendous difficulty in doing that. I mean, just learning two other languages, that takes quite a big effort. There are so many. Mandakini, I don't know if any of you have met Mandakini. She comes here sometimes. She went to Russia. She went to, Prabhupada asked her to go to Russia and get married to this one Russian devotee that lived there and teach him all about Krishna consciousness. Now, just try to imagine if somebody told you, okay, I want you to go to Russia and marry this person you haven't met and teach them about Krishna consciousness. I don't know. I mean, that's how much affection devotees had for problems. They were willing to do anything, to try anything. You know, there was a great story about the train. Somebody got on a train. Prabhupada was traveling on his train, and he had some of his disciples with him, and somebody was offering them some land. And he just turned to his disciples and said, okay, you get off the train here and go do something. They did it. Or the six devotees that came here, and the reason that we have this, all of this. He said, okay, I want you to go to England and, you know, introduce Krishna consciousness. And just see what they were able to do. And what was the basis of that activity? It was this sense of adventure, this sense of simply out of affection for Prabhupada. You know, taking all kinds of risks. And in a way, I think that maybe if anything's lacking presently in our movement, that sometimes this spirit to some degree, I'm not saying it's dead everywhere, but that spirit of out of love, out of affection for the spiritual master, taking risks, trying to do something that's just very difficult. You know, I don't say impossible, but difficult, taking on difficulty and out of affection. So, you know, it's not something that can be done artificially, but we should try to find the inspiration as far as possible to do the maximum that we can do. So anyway, my point really is I'm not trying to be negative, I'm just saying that this is the secret. You'll ask any of these devotees that have done amazing things. They didn't feel that they were especially qualified even. But because they had so much affection for Prabhupada, they took the tremendous risks and underwent all kinds of austerities and difficulties just to please him. I mean, why did Tamal Krishna Maharaj and, say, Vishnujan Maharaj organize all these buses and programs all over the U.S. to establish and distribute millions of Prabhupada's books? Because they wanted to please Prabhupada. There was tremendous competition amongst the leaders, but what was the competition? The competition was who could please Prabhupada the most? Who would convince Prabhupada to come to their temple? So it was really a very there are many things that were crazy also. A lot of crazy stuff went on in the early days, but this was one of the positives, that there was so much you could say dedication and affection for Prabhupada that people tried to do the impossible. Even, you know, they talk about this thing about, I know that Shyam Sundar's book, I think he's called The Chasing Rhinos, which is a very politically nice, I mean, it's a good title, but really the analogy Prabhupada gave was shooting the rhinoceros. To shoot a rhinoceros is very difficult because they have this very thick, horny plate on their bodies, and to try to stop them, even with a powerful gun, is very, very difficult. So you'd say it's almost an impossible thing to do, to kill a rhinoceros. But if you manage to do it, then people say, oh, that's amazing, that's wonderful. And if you don't do it, then it's, well, anyway, it was a rhinoceros. So that spirit of going for the rhinoceros, that was something that, you know, if possible, we should try to imbibe that spirit as far as we're capable. But sometimes we don't even know what we're capable of until we kind of put it on the line and try to do our maximum. I mean, no one ever can criticize you if you've tried your best. I always quote this little aphorism, you could call it, from Abraham Lincoln. He said, I do the very best I know how, the very best I can, and I intend to keep on doing so until the end. If the end brings me out all right, it will make no difference. If the end brings me out wrong, 10 angels swearing I was right will make no difference. So he's expressing a kind of detachment. And the detachment is, if you've actually given your best, then even if someone says it's not good enough, who cares? You can't do better than your best. But everyone in their heart knows whether they're giving their best or not. So that's the thing we see with these personalities, like Rupa Goswami, like Sanatana Goswami. It's not just that they were empowered souls from the spiritual world that, you know, it was no big deal. They could do anything anyway. No, there was tremendous effort. Tremendous effort and sacrifice. And, you know, it was difficult what they did. Living like mendicants in Vrindavan. They'd lived in the lap of luxury for years under Muslim rule. And, you know, they gave it all up out of love for Lord Chaitanya. So that's, at least theoretically, that's why we joined this movement, not to necessarily be Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis, but at least to give our best for the sake of Krishna. I remember there was an interesting conversation that just came into my mind where they were probably talking about remembering Krishna at the point of death. And one of his disciples said, well, what about if we remember our spiritual master at the point of death? And Prabhupada said, well, spiritual master is going to Krishna, so that's all right too. So if we have this sort of dedication to our spiritual master, giving him the best part of us, and trying to find out what our limitations are by making our best endeavor, then we'll actually be happy and successful in life. If we're lackluster, if we're lazy, if we're... Actually, that's one time Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked Prabhupada, what was your secret of success? And Prabhupada said, I was never a lazy man. He said, I worked hard, and similarly, you should also work hard. So sometimes it just comes down to working hard. Working hard. Giving your best. So I think that this is the inspiration of these Goswamis, not just that they were exalted personalities, not just that they laid the groundwork for Krishna conscious philosophy, you know, not on a sentimental basis, but on a rigorous philosophical basis. Okay, great. But what's more than that, what's wonderful about them, I think, is the way they expressed their love for Lord Chaitanya, that they were ready to undergo anything and everything to please him. So I think that's the inspiration, or that's the relevance for us in hearing about these great personalities, to take inspiration from their lives, their lifetimes. Okay, that's pretty much all I've got. Anybody? Questions? Comments?